This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine discovering that the top trending software vendor among American corporations right now isn't based in Silicon Valley or Seattle or Austin.
Yeah, not even close.
Right. It is actually based in Beijing, and it is processing millions of lines of American corporate data every single day for literally pennies on the dollar.
Which is just wild.
It really is. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We are so thrilled to have you here with us because today, well, we have a custom-tailored mission for you.
We do. We're unpacking a truly massive stack of intelligence briefings today.
A huge stack. And they're all dated June 28, 2026.
Right. And we are looking at a coordinated systemic pivot in China's technology sector. Like, this isn't just a software update.
No, definitely not.
These briefings cover simultaneous breakthroughs in artificial intelligence, humanoid robotics, advanced semiconductor manufacturing, and global telecommunications.
And our sources today are highly varied, too. I mean, we have official Chinese government mandates. We've got geopolitical analyses from the Brookings Institution and CSIS.
Plus those really detailed hardware teardowns from Tech Insights.
Exactly. So the big question we are trying to answer for you today is this. Are the global tech guardrails actually holding, or are we actively witnessing the birth of two completely separate parallel tech ecosystems?
That's the million-dollar question, really.
It is. Now, before we jump into this, I want to give a really quick but important disclaimer. The sources we're looking at today deal with highly charged geopolitical strategies.
Very charged.
Yep.
Between the U.S., China, and allied nations.
Right. And our goal here is absolutely not to take a political side or to endorse any specific nation's strategy. We are strictly here to act as your objective guides.
Yeah, we just want to help you understand the data, the claims, and the analyses exactly as they are presented in these 2026 briefings.
Exactly. We're leaving the politics completely at the door.
We're focusing entirely on the mechanics of what is happening, how the technology is functioning, and, you know, why it matters to the global supply chain.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because starting with the software side, the briefings indicate a complete collapse in the cost of top-tier AI.
Complete collapse. It's staggering.
ByteDance has just revealed their new Dubao 2.1 Pro model. And the benchmarks in these reports are, frankly, well, they're insane.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it is hitting GPT 5.5 levels of performance in coding and autonomous agent tasks.
Right. It actually scored number one on TurboBench 2.1 and SWE Pro.
Which, for those who don't know, are the industry standards for testing how well an AI can write software and operate systems on its own.
But the scale of deployment is what really stands out in the briefing, right?
Oh, absolutely. The daily token call volume for Dubao has surpassed 180 trillion tokens a day.
Wow. 180 trillion.
Yeah. That is a 1,500 times increase in just 2 years, making it the largest actual usage scale of any large model in China.
Okay, before we talk about the pricing, which is the really crazy part, I hear the word tokens thrown around constantly.
Right, right.
For someone who doesn't build AI for a living, what, like, physically is a token in this context?
So think of a token as a piece of a word or a syllable. It is the fundamental unit of data that an AI model reads and generates.
Okay. Like the atomic building blocks of the prompt.
Exactly. When you ask an AI question, it breaks your prompt down into tokens, processes them, and spits out an answer token by token.
Got it.
So 180 trillion tokens a day means this system is processing an unimaginably vast amount of human intent and automated data every 24 hours.
And to capture that massive volume, they're practically giving it away.
Basically, yeah.
ByteDance is charging only 30 RMB, which is roughly $4 US for 1 million output tokens.
Right. And for context, that is 80% cheaper than Claude Opus 4.6.
Which brings us back to that hook at the very beginning about American corporate spending.
Yeah, the June 2026 data from RAMP illustrates this perfectly.
RAMP, the corporate spend management platform.
Exactly. They analyzed the actual credit card payments of over 50,000 U.S. companies. And the number one trending software vendor in the United States right now is a Chinese AI company called DeepSeek.
That is just wild to me.
I mean, while OpenAI and Anthropic still hold the largest overall market share, DeepSeek is growing the fastest.
But why is a Chinese AI firm suddenly beating out domestic vendors for new American corporate spend?
Pure economics. It's just math. DeepSeek's V4 Pro model costs just 87 cents per million output tokens.
87 cents.
Yeah. That is 1/34th the cost of GPT 5.5.
1/34th. I mean, if you are a startup running millions of automated operations a day, that is literally the difference between going bankrupt and turning a profit.
What's fascinating here is the fundamental shift in how this technology is being consumed.
How so?
Well, previously, a U.S. company might download an open-source Chinese model and just run it locally on their own private servers.
Keeping it in-house.
Exactly. But the RAMP data shows American companies are now paying for direct hosting. They are plugging their internal software directly into DeepSeek's APIs.
Okay, so an API, an application programming interface, is basically a live pipeline between two different software systems.
Yes, exactly. And when a company uses an API for direct hosting, the data isn't being processed on the American company's laptop or their local server.
Right, it's leaving the building.
It's being sent through that pipeline to DeepSeek servers, processed there, and the answer is sent back.
Wow.
This means American corporate data is flowing directly to servers hosted by a Chinese firm. For the first time, analysts can clearly measure the scale of U.S. corporate data flowing outward.
Which obviously brings massive data sovereignty issues to the forefront.
It creates a major dilemma. The briefing notes that allied nations like South Korea are facing this exact pressure too.
Because their companies want the cheap compute as well.
Right. Their domestic companies are exposed to the same massive cost incentives. It's forcing governments into a really tough balancing act between allowing their companies to save money and maintaining sovereign control over their proprietary data.
I mean, if top-tier compute is suddenly this cheap and usage is scaling up by a factor of 1,500, the physical networks carrying all this data must be buckling under the strain.
Oh, totally.
How is the global telecommunications industry keeping the pipes from bursting?
Well, that physical strain was the core theme of the Mobile World Congress, MWC Shanghai 2026, which just wrapped up.
Okay.
Over 37,000 attendees from 143 countries gathered there to discuss the formal shift from a traffic economy to an AI token economy.
Wait, what is the practical difference between a traffic economy and a token economy for the end user?
So in a traditional traffic economy, telecom networks are just dumb pipes.
Dumb pipes.
Yeah. They're designed to move a video file or a web page from point A to point B as fast as possible. Bandwidth is all that matters.
Right. Okay.
But in a token economy, the network has to be intelligent. It has to route complex AI computational tasks in real time.
Oh, I see.
Companies like China Mobile showcased a 372% jump in token processing throughput by redesigning their infrastructure so that AI agents are treated as first-class citizens on the network.
Wow.
Yeah. They're embedding compute power directly into the cell towers themselves for the upcoming 6G rollout in the 2030s.
So the network itself becomes like a distributed brain.
Exactly.
But if AI tokens are the brain, what happens when you give that brain a physical body?
Well, that's where things get really sci-fi.
Right, because the briefings transition from digital infrastructure into a massive pivot toward robotics.
Yes, they do.
The Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIIT, and the state asset regulator, SAS, just issued a joint mandate for the real-world training of humanoid robots.
Right.
They are mandating the deployment of 10,000 units this year across 9 sectors, including manufacturing, disaster relief, and warehousing, using state-owned factories as the initial testing ground.
And they're pushing for these robots to enter work mode immediately, tasking engineers to develop over 100 high-value, real-world application scenarios.
I have to admit some skepticism here, though.
Fair enough.
We see these sweeping technology mandates announced frequently, and sometimes they just, you know, quietly fizzle out.
Yeah, that happens.
Are these 10,000 robots actually going to be doing meaningful work on an assembly line, or is this just a state-funded publicity stunt to build a bunch of metal statues?
Well, the hard data suggests it goes far beyond a publicity stunt. Let's look at the global market share data from 2025.
Okay, let's hear it.
Out of roughly 17,000 global humanoid robot shipments, China accounted for 84.7%.
Wow.
That's over 14,400 units already shipped. And the top 6 humanoid robotics companies globally are all Chinese.
Really? All 6?
All 6. Edgebot leads with 39% of the global market, followed by Unitree. Together, just those two companies control over 70% of global shipments.
Wait, if they already have that much market share, why mandate the purchase of 10,000 more? Like, why not just fund the R&D labs to make the robots smarter?
Ah, so this is where the commentary from lawyer Kim Kung Jin in our briefing becomes crucial.
Okay.
He points out that this mandate is not a technology policy. It is an industrial policy.
What's the difference?
A technology policy gives grants to scientists in a lab. An industrial policy artificially guarantees a massive initial market.
Oh, I see. But how does guaranteeing a market actually change the hardware itself?
It fundamentally alters the supply chain through economies of scale. If a robotics startup knows the government will buy 10,000 units, they can go to the factories that make servo motors, battery packs, and actuators.
And place a massive bulk order.
Exactly. And that bulk order allows those suppliers to optimize their assembly lines, which aggressively drives down the cost to produce each individual part.
Oh, wow.
It is the exact same playbook the Chinese government used to completely dominate the global electric vehicle and solar panel markets.
Right, the EV playbook.
Yep. They absorb the early, expensive phase of manufacturing, drop the unit cost, and then flood the global market with cheap, highly capable products.
And Kim notes that for allied nations like South Korea or the U.S. who do not have a similar 10,000-unit government deployment plan, the pressure on their domestic robotic supply chains is going to be immense.
Huge pressure.
Their domestic startups simply won't have the bulk volume required to negotiate lower prices for parts, making it nearly impossible to compete on the final sticker price of the robot.
Precisely the concern outlined in the briefings.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me, though. I am looking at these numbers. 180 trillion AI tokens a day. 10,000 humanoid robots navigating dynamic factory floors.
It's a lot of computing power.
To power all of that, you need an absolute ocean of advanced microchips.
An ocean, yes.
And I am genuinely confused here. We've spent the last several years hearing about incredibly strict U.S. export controls designed specifically to restrict China's access to advanced chips.
Right, the chip bans.
So how on earth are they powering this explosion of compute if they are cut off from the hardware?
Well, the Brookings Institution report in our stack tackles this exact paradox.
Oh, good.
The report is provocatively titled, "Ball Game's Over." According to their data, Chinese domestically produced AI chips captured a 41% domestic market share in 2025.
41%? Wait, prior to 2023, didn't the American firm NVIDIA hold over 90% of that market?
They did. But Huawei alone now accounts for half of that new domestic share, with a production target of 1.25 million AI chips for 2026.
Okay, so the export controls didn't stop the development. They just forced Chinese tech giants to buy local hardware instead of American hardware.
Pretty much.
But how did they actually manufacture them? The U.S. blocked access to EUV extreme ultraviolet lithography machines, which, like, the entire industry agreed was the absolute prerequisite for making advanced chips.
Right. And that brings us to the hardware teardown by TechInsights. They acquired the new Huawei Mate 80 Pro Max and ripped out the processor, the Kirin 9030.
And what did they find?
They proved that China's top foundry, SICMET, successfully achieved 5-nanometer production using older DUV deep ultraviolet machines. They completely bypassed the restricted EUV technology.
Okay, for those of us who don't spend our weekends in a semiconductor fab,
fair.
What is the actual difference between EUV and DUV, and how did they bypass the restriction?
Okay, imagine trying to draw a highly detailed map of New York City onto a postage stamp.
It sounds impossible, but okay.
EUV technology is like drawing that map with an ultra-fine laser pointer. You can get incredible detail in a single pass.
Nice and clean.
Right. But DUV technology is like trying to draw that same microscopic map using a wide-beam flashlight.
Oh, I see. The beam is just too thick to draw the tiny lines required for a 5-nanometer chip.
Exactly.
So if the flashlight beam is too wide, how do you get the fine lines?
You have to use a process called multi-patterning.
Multi-patterning.
Yeah. You create a series of complex stencils. You pass the silicon wafer under the flashlight with the first stencil. Then you swap the stencil and run it under the light again and again and again.
That sounds incredibly tedious.
No, it is.
And it seems like every time you swap the stencil, you run the risk of misaligning the map.
That's exactly the catch. Yep. It is highly inefficient and prone to microscopic errors. If a stencil is misaligned by a fraction of a hair, the entire chip is ruined and has to be thrown away.
Yep.
Yeah. The TechInsights report notes that because of this defect rate, SMIC's DUV process is estimated to be 40 to 50% more expensive than the equivalent process at TSMC in Taiwan, who uses the proper EUV lasers.
Wait. If the chips cost 50% more to make and a huge portion of them end up in the trash, how does a company like Huawei or SMIC not just go bankrupt?
Subsidies.
Ah.
The Chinese government heavily subsidizes the manufacturing process to ensure technological independence. Because the subsidies mask that inefficiency, the end user buying the AI computer, the robot, never feels the cost difference.
I see. So it doesn't matter if the manufacturing is inefficient as long as the state is covering the loss.
Right. But It is worth noting a major caveat from the Brookings report, however.
Which is?
Even with these domestic workarounds, the U.S. still holds a massive 21 to 49 times advantage in overall AI compute power for 2026.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the raw performance gap at the absolute cutting edge is still very real.
Very real. But the subsidized Chinese chips fundamentally change the competitive landscape for allied foundries like Samsung. If the Chinese domestic market is walled off and filled by subsidized local chips, global foundries lose access to one of their biggest global revenue streams.
So what does this all mean for the rest of the world? Because this technology doesn't exist in a vacuum.
No, it certainly doesn't.
I mean, the hardware workarounds, the cheap AI tokens, the subsidized robots, these breakthroughs are slamming directly into international diplomacy. We have a literal tale of two ecosystems playing out in the global summits detailed in these briefings.
The diplomatic contrast is stark. On one side, you have the World Economic Forum's Summer Davos in Dalian.
Right.
Premier Li Qiang delivered a speech there introducing the AI Commons strategy.
AI Commons? That sounds like they're framing their AI infrastructure as a global public good.
Exactly. China is actively pushing to share its open source AI models and infrastructure with the developing world.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Yeah.
The incentive structure is clear. They are offering the Global South a way to plug into top-tier AI without having to pay Western premium prices. It's a diplomatic tool to export their technological standards globally.
And while that's happening, on the exact same week, you have the second PAXILICA summit happening in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. PAXILICA is essentially the counterweight. It just concluded with 35 countries participating.
Mm.
And notably, they just added the European Union to the signatory list.
Okay.
This summit is actively institutionalizing a supply chain that explicitly excludes China.
Wow.
They are setting up a foundry school for talent, and significantly, they are launching a pilot program in Panama for an AI supply chain certification and tracking platform.
Wait, a tracking platform? So they want a digital ledger proving exactly where every single component of an AI chip was sourced, ensuring none of it touched the Chinese ecosystem.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That is the literal definition of building a parallel ecosystem. But what happens to the countries caught in the middle of these two massive tectonic plates?
Well, this raises an important question. And the briefings highlight South Korea as the prime example of this geopolitical squeeze.
How are they squeezed?
On one hand, South Korea is an early signatory to the PAXILICA alliance. But on the other hand, their economy is deeply entwined with the Chinese market.
Right.
The data shows South Korea's semiconductor exports to China just jumped by 243%.
And now they have the U.S. Congress pushing something called the MDICH Act.
The Multilateral AI and Technology Control Harmonization Act
rolls right off the tongue.
Right. A new CSIS report points out that allies like South Korea, Japan, and Taiwan do not currently have the exact same level of strict export controls as the U.S. entity list.
Just to clarify for everyone, the U.S. entity list is a trade restriction document.
Yeah.
Like, if a foreign company is on that list, American businesses are legally banned from selling them specific technologies, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
It is Washington's primary tool for restricting technology transfer. The MTCH Act is designed to legally pressure these allied nations to fully align their domestic export restrictions with Washington's entity list.
So if you are the South Korean government, the U.S. is telling you to adopt their strict export bans, right? As your own semiconductor exports to China are spiking by 243%.
Yeah.
That is an agonizing position to be in.
It really is. Lawyer Kim's commentary warns that if these middle ground nations can't find a balance, their current export boom could turn into a massive regulatory liability next quarter.
Jeez.
And stepping back, the AI common strategy means this isn't just a U.S.-China issue.
Because it's spreading.
Because China is exporting this cheap open source tech to the global south. International companies from allied nations are soon going to face off against heavily subsidized Chinese technology, not just in Beijing, but in emerging markets across Southeast Asia, the Middle East, and Africa.
It is a complete rewiring of the global technology map. We've covered so much ground today. To quickly recap for you, we are looking at the rapid commoditization of AI.
Right.
Driven by a race to capture the market through a token economy where highly capable AI is available for fractions of a penny.
Penny.
We are seeing the physical manifestation of that AI through massive state-backed deployments of humanoid robots.
Using industrial policy to brute force a new global supply chain.
Exactly. And underneath it all, we are witnessing the fracturing of the global silicon market, where export controls force the creation of a deeply subsidized parallel hardware ecosystem that is now being exported diplomatically as an AI commons.
So true. You know, as we look at all this data, there is a final thought from the briefings that I think is crucial to mull over.
What's that?
The concluding commentary points out that in this new era, the ultimate defensive moat isn't actually the underlying code. And it might not even be the most advanced microchip.
Really? What is it then?
The real moat is experience, trust, and data.
Because the computational models themselves are getting so incredibly cheap and ubiquitous.
Exactly. I mean, if U.S. companies are willingly routing their corporate data through Chinese AI APIs simply because it is 34 times cheaper.
Right.
And if developing nations across the global South are eagerly adopting Chinese digital infrastructure because it is free and open source,
then the geopolitical battle lines of the future won't be drawn over who has the smallest nanometer transistor.
Exactly. The battle will be won by whoever owns the infrastructure where the world's daily data actually lives and breathes.
We started this deep dive talking about maps and guardrails. It seems pretty clear that the old guardrails didn't just fail.
No, they didn't.
They inadvertently acted as the blueprints for a completely parallel world. It's up to you to decide which map you're going to navigate by. Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration of the 2026 intelligence briefings.
It's been a fascinating look at what's ahead.
Keep questioning the lines on the map, keep looking for where the data is actually flowing, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.